When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Is out there, in here, who knows? But either way, we are opening up the Bloom Files here on Post Show Recaps and X-Files First Watch / Rewatch Podcast. Hello everybody, Mike Bloom here, and we've done it. We have reached the end of the road in the first run of the X-Files as we are talking about the last two episodes, and who golly, what a two episodes they were. I'm of course joined by the prosecutor to my defense attorney in this wild trial.
No.
Angela Bloom, attorney at law.
Maybe.
Maybe. Is that you're talking about future aspirations for you?
Yeah, maybe. My parents did always tell me I would make a good lawyer, which I was always really offended by.
Why?
Because it was like after I would say something like incredibly sassy or like incredibly bossy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the assumption is that you to be a lawyer, you have to like have, you know, a witty repartee. You know, feels like something only typical of TV lawyers.
And I think I would also like argumentative, maybe, is perhaps the negative terminology used about me as a young child.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing, though, was that was pre-internet. So now, like, you don't even need to be a lawyer. You could just go online if you want to argue with somebody.
Well, I didn't want to argue. We're arguing right now. But I don't want to argue.
I don't think we're arguing.
We're squabbling.
No, don't quote Bluey.
It can't be an episode of the Bloom Files without me quoting Bluey.
Yeah, the Bluey Bloom Files, if it were.
Oh, I wish. Let's do a rewatch of Bluey.
I mean, that would be much easier compared to the X-Files. Yeah. They're 7-minute episodes.
The Bloom Files. This is great. Bye.
Yeah, but the B-L-U-E-M Files.
Uh-huh, exactly.
All right, so let's talk about Sunshine Days. And probably more importantly, I think the main spotlight goes to the two-part finale of The X-Files.
The truth!
The truth. I mean, you prepared me.
I did, and you were not prepared.
I do not think I was prepared.
It's not good.
I mean, I wasn't prepared for essentially like three quarters of the Seinfeld finale and then like one quarter of weird CGI madness.
Yeah, it's very much so nothing happened today.
Like, yeah, nothing important happened today.
Yeah, that should have been the title of the finale. But what did you think about these two episodes, this one being the penultimate and then the finale?
It's tough because, like, I like how
I liked the episode too.
I liked the episode. I really liked the episode. Like, I liked how
Sunshine Days, that is.
Yeah, Sunshine Days. I liked how it was evocative of, you know, a lot of stuff we did like about the X-Files, especially in those earlier seasons, right? Or even something like, you know, Clyde Bruckman, or like, was the Goldberg variation, right? The whole
bad little
luck
bit more
thing.
Spooky, a little bit more like supernatural.
Yeah, a little creepy, but like kind of funny, weird at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed that. But I don't know how I feel about it as the penultimate episode of the show.
No, it doesn't make a ton of sense. And I guess when things were going on, they were trying to, you know, have like a very typical not mythology episode to kind of like, this will be the last, you know, Monster of the Week episode. And then the finale will be the last arc episode. And that'll be that. And it's like, okay. Maybe something a little bit more tied to the series.
Like, that's the thing, is like, especially when you had that really like three strikes and you're out of killing off the lone gunman.
Yes.
You know, adopting off William and then revealing the truth behind Dog and Son.
Yeah.
I can understand why some levity might be necessary going into the finale to sort of cleanse everyone's palates, but I don't know. At the same time, this just feels a bit of a swing in the complete opposite direction. Not to say again that like,
not a swing and a miss. Like,
a vacuum,
I like it.
Again, I really loved the episode, but like, I don't know how I would feel in the moment as the penultimate episode of the X-Files in general.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's definitely something a little bit more, could have been further up in the season, maybe.
Well, let's talk about Sunshine Days. In general,
Sunshine Days.
Yeah, were you, so I know that you and I have watched the Brady Bunch movie. We talked about like a very Brady sequel as well. Like,
ugh, those are the best. I was never a fan of the actual Brady show.
Really?
No, I'm not a big Happy Days, Brady Bunch, Gilligan's Island.
You've talked about three. Those are three very different sitcoms, by the way.
No, but they're the same like vibe. They're the same sort of like era.
Sort of.
Like same sort of like that time period.
I guess so. Well, no. Gilligan's Island was more so the 60s and Brady Bunch was the 70s.
60s, 70s. We're not talking like 90s sitcoms here. You know. So I feel like for me, those sitcoms of that era were not my, cup of tea. I'm also not a big fan of, and this is going to probably offend a lot of people, but things like the Looney Tunes, things like...
But, like, that has nothing to do with this.
No, I think it does, though, because I think it's all that sort of same comedic, like, setup and then punchline. Setup and then punchline. It's like, that's the whole thing. That is all of these things.
I don't know. I don't know if I define the Brady Bunch as
it's
like, I don't know if it belongs
super
in the
cheesy
same sphere.
Too.
I mean, it's super cheesy, but yeah.
Everything in that realm is, that's just how I feel.
I mean.
Get over it, Blum.
I unironically love the Brady Bunch.
I'm sure.
I used to watch it all the time on Nick at Night. I used to watch Pop Up Brady, which is when they would air the show on TV Land. And
yeah, like I couldn't get on board with the Partridge Family either.
Yeah, the Partridge Family, they were too. Oh, God. They were freaking losers.
Oh, my God.
Compared to the Brady Bunch? Oh, my God. Brady Bunch were so cool compared to the freaking Partridge
Family. No, I can't. It's
Dang
just too...
You can fall off a cliff.
I need a little bit more,
I
need a little more chew in my television.
No, I want no chew or jew. And none were found.
None to be found. Searched far and wide there.
Good non-denominational family. It was also magnified for me by what I would very much co-sign, like very excellent parody films, a very Brady movie and a very Brady sequel.
Oh, those I am all on board with. And I don't think that I can say that I would watch the Brady Bunch television show, even though I love those movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like poking fun at something.
Right, they're poking fun at how ridiculous it is.
Yeah.
Like how wholesome it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's also the purpose behind this episode, right?
It's
this idea Americana and how it is used in a bastardized, scandalized way for murder.
For murder.
You know, for murder.
I also think it has a little bit to do with also this guy, you know, we'll get into it, but him... having a little bit of like a nostalgia for something and that idea of nostalgia being a safe place and all of that sort of stuff.
Very relatable nowadays, right?
What are we doing right now?
Yeah, I mean, if it was made nowadays, would it be like, I don't know, Third Rock from the Sun? Would it be where they'd
Friends?
Set the place? Friends. Yeah, I'm always more of a Third Rock from the Sun person.
They're, again, not the same. But
French Stewart was...
I love Third Rock
back
from
the
Sun.
Back in
the
day, he was hysterical.
It was a different kind of... I mean, those were like aliens and it was... yeah.
That was more X-Files, I think, than Friends.
I don't think Friends was
Maybe
the same.
Maybe that's the next one we'll do is the Third Rock from the Sun rewatch.
Not sure how far we'd get.
With little JGL.
Yeah, it's good. It's just gets old pretty quickly.
Yeah, we call it the Big Giant Head Podcast.
Oh my god.
That was the name of like the alien overlord. Yes. Like, a message from the big giant head.
Wow. Tangent.
I mean, again, this is where the finale has brought us to, but let's talk about Sunshine Days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is also a prototypical X-Files cold open, right? Of like,
yes,
two jamokes sitting outside being like, oh, good, a little bit of dirty to go inside that house.
This happened in early X-Files too, where they were like,
again, I said prototypical.
In the desert, and the guys were like, yeah, and then we're just
we're chasing UFOs.
Yeah, exactly. But no, they go in, and the guy's like, oh, this is where the Brady Bunch was filmed.
And they're like, no, it's in the middle of nowhere. And then they look inside the house, and indeed,
yeah,
the entire interior is made up of it. So I'm sure you have production details as to...
I have some.
So did they have to recreate the entire set?
They recreated the entire set because, according to Gillian Anderson, the actual set of the Brady Bunch was dismantled a long time ago.
I mean, understandably so. I don't think that thing is like put in amber or anything.
No, but there are sets that exist today that you can go visit on like Hollywood lots and stuff, and like, you know, that it depends on how what it is, and but
yeah,
older stuff typically no.
Right. I feel like they only started doing that in like the 2000s maybe.
Yeah, like you can go see the Gilmore Girls set or whatever. And then there's the row of like externals that you can go walk through and all that. But no, they had to reassemble it. And then, you know, so that was like a big deal. And she said people came from all over just to like take pictures. Like they made a ton of money just to like for tourists because they
recreated the set for the show.
Yeah. And people were like, oh, I love the Brady Bunch.
I mean, it's incredibly well done.
Like, if you had the opportunity, wouldn't you want to just go, like, take a picture?
Yeah, down to, like, the weird non-connected stairs, you know, the horse statue, all of that.
Oh, the horse statue.
A pivotal part of a very Brady sequel.
Amazing.
Real MacGuffin of it.
It's the best.
But basically, one of these jamokes essentially gets, like, what catches his eye is him seeing Shining style, like two facsimiles of, I guess, what are supposed to be Cindy and Bobby.
Yeah.
And then before we know it, like external shot, he gets thrown through the roof and lands on the car.
Yeah, he gets thrown up. And I guess at that point also isn't that when the football comes down the stairs?
That's what draws him upstairs. It's like the football just ominously bounces down the stairs.
The football. And then the other kid's like, hey, wasn't there that episode where Marcia gets hit in the face with the football?
That's the other thing is that I do
no,
feel
my
like,
nose.
Yeah, that's I do feel like they kind of had to unfortunately write themselves into a corner of like, if you don't get the reference, you have to describe it.
Yes.
Just so everyone's on the same page.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, even somebody who's not like, I didn't watch the Brady Bunch a ton, like I know what the Brady Bunch is.
Well,
you know the
pastiches, right?
You know
Broke My Nose, you know Davy Jones.
Yeah, exactly.
And the rest. Johnny Bravo. So Doggett and Reyes are naturally called in to investigate the murder at the crime scene, but the bigger to-do, and to say I literally screamed when I saw Michael Emerson.
Oh my god, yeah, I forgot he was in this, so might be.
Yeah, so I mean,
it
was good though, because
to me he was just like unassuming white male.
Yeah, I like the surprise though.
You were like, oh my god,
I thought we were done with
Ben.
Lost. It's Ben. It's Michael Emerson. I mean, this is also only
not too far off.
No, he starts appearing on Lost in 2005, and this is, I'm assuming, in like spring 2002. So he's only a few years away.
Although I will say he looks much younger here than he does in Lost.
Well, also when he comes on to Lost initially, he's supposed to play like someone who spends a good amount of it imprisoned in the hatch. So he definitely is made up to be a bit more bug-eyed.
Yes,
that time.
Yes, true.
So, yeah, so Michael Emerson, what's his character's name? Oliver?
So his character's name is Oliver initially, and then they find out his name is... What is it?
It's like Anthony works in a grocery store, right?
Yeah, something like that.
But he's not moving out anytime soon, because as they walk inside, they see...
so stupid. But yes, his name is Anthony.
Thank you for writing the iTunes reviews ahead of time, by the way, for me.
So dumb.
He's a dumb, stupid idiot.
What a dumb.
Who talked for way too long about the Brady Bunch. So it turns out, like, what's going on here? You know, the interior obviously looks a lot different than the way that we saw it.
Yeah, so the interior is basically just a rundown house, like a middle America house.
Mm-hmm. And so they, I guess, leave, right? Because they're like, all right, I guess nothing to
well,
see
yeah, because the kid, basically the kid, the guy lands on the roof and his friend finds him. And then his friend is basically like trying to tell the police what happened. And they're like, this is what happened. It was the Brady Bunch house. I swear there, you know, he came from that house. He came through the roof. That's how it happened.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, you're nuts. And so, you know, they and this is they, meaning Monica and Doggett.
Right. For, I thought you said Monica and Chandler for a second. I still have friends on the brain.
No. Monica Reyes and John Doggett. They basically are called in to investigate this because it's like a suspicious, quote unquote. And they speak to Michael Emerson and you know, but it doesn't look, yeah, like you said, doesn't look anything like what we just saw. And, you know, they leave, but before they leave, Doggett basically checks the trash can and finds asphalt shingles in there.
To imply that, hey, there was a hole in the roof and they
You keep
to...
saying roof like rough, and I don't know if you're doing it intentionally.
Of course I'm doing it intentionally. Okay. I know that you are always on eggshells with me ever since the whole museum fiasco.
No, I'm used to it now, but with I say rough.
No, you say roof.
Well, I'm saying roof, but like if I say it quickly, I'll go rough.
Well, I do it because of one of my favorite.
But
lines
I don't say rough
from the Santa Claus.
I'll go like roof.
Tim
roof.
Allen and exasperated roof. Scott Calvin goes, "What happens if I fall off the roof?"
Yeah, you just keep saying it without explaining it, though. People are gonna think you say roof weird.
Oh, should I do like this episode? See, there's a movie called The Santa Claus.
Yes, correct.
Remember this that time in The Santa Claus with the montage of them getting outfitted with gear? And Charlie does the wrong arms when they're marching down the hallway.
God, we love that movie so much.
We would quote that movie a supernatural amount of times.
So but yeah, it fall off the roof.
The other Jamoke ends up getting his due here. Like he ends up, you know, pouring one out for his buddy later that night. And then he looks into the house and is like,
his name is Mike, by the way.
Oh my God. What was the other guy's name?
Blake.
Why I scoffed at the name
I don't
Blake.
Know it's a fine name.
I don't think I've ever met a Blake before.
I know a Blake. He's quite nice.
Yeah Okay.
He's a history professor.
Interesting.
Married to a friend of mine's sister. They've walked every national park.
Look at you, Blake. But this Blake won't be walking anymore.
Yeah,
because he's dead.
Yes.
So in this case, Mike sees the family, like the Brady Bunch family sitting down for dinner.
Super creepy. Because he's like, no, there's something going up. So yeah, he sees them all at the dinner table, which
and
is
so
like
he
wild.
Goes inside to be like, what the hell's going on? Mm-hmm. And it's gone again. But now he's floating.
Mm-hmm.
And now we see what is assumingly the cause of Blake's death as well. He gets shot straight up through the roof.
Yeah.
And basically, now I understand the Looney Tunes comparison you're making, though I don't think you meant it that way before.
I didn't, but it's apt.
Yeah, well, I think that's what Doggett and Reyes are talking about, right? And I think that's a really actually fun runner throughout the script here is the A to B to C of it all, right? Like, I love how they bring that back, but that's how Doggett sort of implies. I mean, he is initially, again, he's the molder in this case of being like, okay, clearly these shingles mean that he was, you know, thrown through the roof. And Reyes is like, that is physically impossible.
Yeah, she's like, you know, you can't just jump from A to D. You need to find how you got there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you can't just say it and we'll all believe you.
Well, luckily, here comes Scully here with a bit of a deus ex machina as she's able to show them footage done from a study with an 8-year-old boy who seemed to possess some form of telekinesis, right?
Psychokinesis, but it's fine.
Was cyberkinesis?
Psychokinesis.
Because
telekinesis is only when you can move things with your mind. Psychokinesis is when you can create things with your mind, like create.
Oh, interesting.
Like,
but does psychokinesis include telekinesis in
it? I don't know. Maybe.
So maybe it's just he just has kinesis in general.
Yeah. But yeah, so basically this is an old X-file, and Scully's like, this guy, Anthony Fogelman, changed his name to Oliver Martin. And so she meets with the doctor. They're going to meet with the doctor. Who's
what's the doctor's name? Because he plays a much larger
role. Dr. John Reitz.
Well, that's actually a very fun name.
Yeah.
Sounds actually like he should be, I don't know, some sort of...
I love this guy. He was
Dr.
great.
Dr. John Reitz.
I love just a character who is what he is. He's a psycho... he's a parapsychologist. Mm. His whole vibe is just investigating the paranormal and how it relates to the mind. And he's a nice guy.
Yeah. I was very surprised that he ended up becoming a fairly pivotal role in the episode.
Yeah, and also like not nefarious in any way, because I feel like there's this idea that like, oh, if he was with a young boy, like maybe he was abusing him.
Exactly. We saw what happened in the last episode.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like there's always that like Law and Order SVU element when it comes to this stuff. But I'm glad that that wasn't the case.
Yeah, so the X-Files that they're talking about, right, is that like back in the 70s, when the Brady Bunch was most popular, there were a series of like unexplained poltergeist incidents that we're assuming Oliver was behind, actually.
Yeah, so he starts basically John Reitz is like working with this kid Anthony, we'll call him now, long time and they're like becoming BFFs, and then, you know, he's in, like, helping discover sort of what his powers are, basically.
Yeah, but then he ends up leaving him, right? And that creates
he ends his study, and like, yeah, he doesn't realize
a sense of abandonment in Anthony that caused him to recede further into his French vanilla fantasy of the Brady Bunch.
Well, and the reason he picks the Brady Bunch is because that's what they watch together. Yeah. He was like a surrogate dad to him, and I don't think that Dr. Reitz knew that.
Right.
He just thought of him as like a patient.
So we see, you know, that they use Reitz as kind of bait in a way, right? That, like, we see that Anthony is painting his house. Clearly, he had to do this, like, every single time one of these guys went through the roof. And so, basically, like, he's trying to convince him to, like, come to his senses.
Well, also, we should note that he named himself Oliver from Cousin Oliver in the Brady Bunch.
Yes. And this is where, again, they have a little bit of an expo dump of, like, who is Cousin Oliver? They talk about how Oliver was known as the Choice.
No, the Jinx.
Oh, the Jinx. Why did I put the Choice
in there? I don't know, but that's a really weird thing to say.
I was like, why did they call him the Choice?
No, he was the Jinx. He was, like, kind of nobody wanted him around. Like, he was a bummer.
I mean, neither did the fans either. I know they brought him in because they're like, oh, we need a cute kid because Bobby has aged out, but still.
But yeah, so basically they're deducing that Oliver or Anthony or whatever feels like he's the Jinx. And I would think it's worth noting here that Dr. Reitz also says that as he got older, his powers disappeared.
Yes.
And then they came back, obviously, when he was abandoned.
So everyone is like, okay, I don't know about this. Scully is the most on board because she essentially is doing this for Mulder, in a manner of speaking. That this was something that he investigated and she wanted to kind of close it on his behalf.
Yeah, I felt like this was phoned in a little bit.
It felt like a little bit of like, okay, we need to give Scully a reason to help out with this.
Not even that, but like the way Gillian Anderson is portraying it, like the entire episode, I just feel like I am not convinced. Like,
well, I mean, this is also, you know, post-William. Like, she should go rest, you know?
Well, I just think that the actress also is like, this is like, we're done.
She's checked out at that point. So Doggett is like, all right, you said break into a house? You didn't? Oh, well, I'll still break into the house anyway. And so Oliver, you know, threatens him, and suddenly Doggett is doing like a Fred Astaire, like floating on the ceiling, dancing around.
Yeah, and he's about to go through the roof.
Luckily, he winds up in the attic because basically Reitz finds him just in time to bring Doggett back down.
Mm-hmm, which is good.
Yeah. And so Oliver, they talk a little bit right about like what his powers entail.
Raz and Scully are basically like huge Brady Bunch fans, BT Dubs. Everyone's a huge Brady Bunch fan.
I mean, how could you not be?
But they're like, they're on board. They're like, this is amazing. Like, this could, you know, impact the world in such a positive way.
Right. I know that Anthony takes them to like the Windows XP background field for them to hang out in for a hot second.
Yeah, which was another like apparently super challenging video effect, because it was done in what they call chroma keying,
where you have to essentially take out like every pixel from the room and replace it with a field.
Yes, and they said that it was like it was basically layering things on top of each other and then adjusting like bits of Scully's hair, and just like really labor intensive.
They spared no expense. It was the penultimate episode. They couldn't go
and
out
it wasn't
with
a really
chintzy.
Good effect.
Yeah, I mean, but it was tough in, you know, 22 years later or whatever this is.
To look
is.
At that and say, oh, that looks terrible.
But like you said, essentially they're trying to convince him to come with them to Washington. Not only to be like, oh, we'll help you control your powers, but also like, hell, this is actual proof of, you know, paranormal powers.
And so they take him to Skinner. And Skinner's like, this is nonsense.
Yeah, there's this really goofy-ass scene where it's like, cut to everyone. Like, Brady Bunch sort of doofy music is playing as everyone's kind of gawking at what's happening. And it turns out that Anthony has lifted Skinner off the ground.
Yeah, he's just sort of floating in midair like a genie. Because he had his arms crossed, too. So it was like, what's happening?
I'm speaking of another sitcom. Skinner's like, oh, we've got to tell everybody. But suddenly Anthony starts seizing on the floor.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if you like figured it out right away at this point, but it was pretty clear that like, okay, he doesn't want to use his powers for a reason. You know, it's like it's killing him.
Yeah, exactly. It's this idea of the more he uses it, the more it eats away at him. It's almost like radioactive from that perspective.
Oh, because it's a neurological thing, I think, you know.
So it's using, you know, a lot of that brain power and sapping away at him. There's a really sweet moment, honestly, where, like, you know, he imagines the Brady Bunch around him. And I thought for a second, like, that would be the last time that we see him in the episode and that he dies that way.
Yeah, luckily not. But they basically realize that the, you know, we can like yada yada through this, but basically yeah. Dr. Reitz was a surrogate dad to him.
Mm-hmm.
And when he left him, he started using his powers again to imagine the Brady Bunch, because that's what they used to watch together on the television. And they realize he is lonely. He doesn't want to be alone. And so he's going to continue to use the powers and kill himself. And he even says that. He's like, I don't want to be alone.
Yeah.
And so the doctor, Dr. Reitz, is like, you're not alone anymore. Like, I'm going to be with you and like, we're going to be okay. So
yeah, it's
really sweet.
It's an understandably happy ending for an episode based around the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, and so they walk off into the sunset. He's not going to use his powers anymore, and they're going to live forever.
And Scully has this commentary, right, where she basically gives, like, a little wrap-up to the Monster yeah. of the Weeks by being like, you know, I learned a lot over these past 9 years mm-hmm. of tomfoolery on a weekly basis.
We might not have had proof of something, you know, ridiculous or paranormal or amazing, but, you know, I think we learned more important things.
Like love.
Along the way.
And I guess speaking of it, though maybe not, it ends with Reyes grabbing Doggett's hand and saying that he's finally getting the hang of the job.
Yeah. No, I think that that's meant to be like signifying that they would have something.
Mm, interesting. Their own little Greg and Marcia moment.
No.
only in a very Brady sequel.
Uh-huh.
All right, so that does it for the final regular episode of The X-Files, Sunshine Days. When we come back, we are going to cover the truth, and we have a good amount to say about it. We'll be right back.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. Here we are. The time has arrived. And Mulder is finally back.
He's back.
He's not a body double running away from a train. He's not existing in Scully's eye for that one scene.
No,
he's here in the flesh.
Yeah. So we arrive at the Mount Weather Emergency Operations Center.
Which is a real place, right?
It is a real place.
Interesting.
It is a real place. And I actually wonder, so I didn't look into this and I probably should have, but I do wonder if this is the same Mount Weather that is used in The 100, which is like, you know, basically, I think it might be because it's part of a contingency plan for relocation of like government officials in the event of nuclear war or major disaster.
Which makes sense given, you know, what Mulder is doing right now.
Yeah. And so in the 100, the television show, it's like basically that's like one of the places they're able to find, you know, to find like they can stay there. So I wonder if it's the same. Yeah, it does. It is the same.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So here Mulder is making his own little impact.
It has been
impact.
Actually has been the setting for several apocalyptic and post-apocalyptic fictional works. The X-Files, Day the Earth Stood Still, The 100, Z Nation. So look at that.
Z Nation. I guess that's, I'm assuming that's something zombie-like.
You know, couldn't tell you.
Well, let's get into Mount Weather. Okay, so we're not going to spend a lot of time here. That's why I sort of forgot the name. Because Mulder's essentially going to do his little spy mission where like he's going to sneak around for a bit. He's going to get to this big, bulky computer that talks about like
war games.
The day has been set for, you know, the rest of it has been obscured. And in comes Noel Rohr in his military browns, as in like he, you know, obviously was able to escape everything from the ship and is now blended back in.
Yeah, exactly. And he's gonna basically like they're gonna go on a little bit of like a, I don't know, like a hunt or whatever.
Well, yeah, first of all, Noel's going to like body Mulder, but then Mulder gets saved by Krycek, and this is one of the many weird things about this episode. Mulder sees dead people.
Yeah, and I don't know if he sees dead people. I think it's more that he's imagining dead people.
Is that worse?
Yeah, no, I think it's better. I think it's better because I think adding the layer that he's seeing dead people is dumb.
Yeah, I mean, well, definitely, because we already had the storyline, right, where he, like, gained his own psychic powers.
So he doesn't have that anymore. So, like, it would be weird to have him do that here. So, but I also don't love this trope of it's the last episode of a series. Let's have every single person that's ever been on the show come back in some weird way.
Though it is interesting to me that they don't have several other dead characters pop up, like his parents.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it just doesn't, like, to have him think of, like, the Deep Throats and the X and the, you know, all of those.
The Lone Gunman.
Like, I just feel like it's all very, a little, you know, schlocky.
Well, Mulder and Noel Rohr do not see eye to eye, so Mulder dumps him on some power lines.
Yes. So he flips him off a catwalk, and he apparently dies by electrocution.
Yeah, and so now all eyes are on Mulder for like, hey, dude, you just killed an army officer.
Right, because he's caught. He's not able to escape. And
everyone is looking at him doing it.
And he, you know, he basically is arrested and he will be in this orange jumpsuit for a long time.
Right. And so now we're going to get, and first off, we should say that the credits are now, it's mostly the new ones, but they do throw Mulder's picture in.
They throw
in
Mulder's
now,
picture in.
Because he does play a large role in these two episodes.
Yeah, so this is, you know, classic truth is out there as well, which is nice.
Yeah. So like you said, a good majority of this first little part of the episode is like Mulder's in oranges, you know, Skinner and Scully are very happy to see him, but he's like refusing to essentially fess up and say anything.
Yeah. And it's kind of a, so yeah, basically everyone finds out about it. And so Mulder and Scully are like, oh dang, Skinner and Scully are like, okay, we got to go get him. And he's in military custody.
Right.
So we should keep note of that because I think it will be important as we get to the trial.
And they believe that he has been conditioned or, you know, maybe even lobotomized
a bit. Well, we do see that at the beginning of the episode too with Mulder. They're basically torturing him and conditioning him to basically believe he's the one that murdered
this guy. But when they first see him, he's like, oh yes, I'm killed
right
him.
So they think we're supposed to think it was successful,
but he's playing it up. Yes. Like, we'll see it later on that he's fine. He was just acting that way for the guards. But Scully is, there's a really nice moment here when Gillian Anderson's able to see him again, because remember, you know, she hasn't seen him since that day, the butt double, since the day he left.
Yeah, so they kiss and it's delightful
and Skinner just stands there.
Yeah, that's awkward.
He don't leave the room, dude. Pretend you have a phone call or something.
Yeah, really. But they try to get him released and it's not happening. And so he's basically told that he has to be part of a military tribunal. And Kirsch is going to be there and he's going to be in charge of it.
Yeah. And Kirsch does, again, because at this moment, this is sort of like pseudo good guy Kirsch, right? Like he does.
He's just doing his job here.
He does, though, try to do a solid for the group. He ends up meeting with one of these military guys, right? And is like,
Can we do anything about this?
Scully basically told me to tell you to go easy on him in the trial. And the guy's like, A, no. B, if you're on the tribunal, if you disagree at all, like, we're going to leak a bunch of shit that we have on you.
Yeah, so it's all just a real big cover-up, which is pretty shitty.
Yeah, so this entire time, Scully is obviously incredibly worried because the love of her life just came back into her life and now has a chance of, you know, being executed. And Mulder's like, I've got it.
Yeah,
it's
he's
fine.
Way too chill about
Don't
it.
Don't worry.
The annoying part about this also is that I think that this whole trial is just so weird because it's, first of all, yes, maybe has he murdered somebody? Perhaps. But Scully and Skinner and Mulder know that he hasn't murdered anyone because it's impossible to murder Noel Rohr.
Right.
And so they're kind of resting on that, but they're not trying to prove it. I mean, they are in a way.
But it's not, because Mulder is also just like, no, like he's actively pushing against any attempts they try to make to prove his innocence as well.
Well, and it's like, instead of proving his innocence for this one thing, they decide they're going to prove the X-Files. And it's like, that's dumb.
Yeah, like,
go find Noel Rohr.
You don't need to save Mulder by essentially proving like the accuracy of your entire show.
Why aren't we looking for like footage or, you know, imagery about where Noel Rohr is? Like, why aren't we trying to identify that this guy's still alive? It's like so stupid. But anyway, you know, they are going to have a trial now. So and Skinner's gonna be Mulder's defense attorney.
Let's talk about this, because I am flummoxed, to be completely honest. Like, it is, Seinfeld had already aired its finale, in which people had absolutely, I think people have come around it, but they absolutely trashed the finale at the time of like, this is just basically a clip show.
Yeah.
And they did the exact same thing down to the trial of repeating the same beats. And in my opinion, it works even less, because with Seinfeld, at least you can make the argument of like,
they're trying to be funny a little bit.
And also like, oh, these people always deserve this, so they finally get what's coming to them.
Yeah.
With Mulder, like, and the X-Files, like that, there's no schadenfreude.
No, there's not. And I think also from my perspective, it's like, we're hoping for some larger resolution from this finale, not a guilty, not guilty verdict. You know, it's like, so say, for example, Mulder is found not guilty. Great. There's still more we want to know.
Yeah.
Like, this is not important.
Yeah, like, the X-Files isn't on trial, because all Mulder was being tried for was, like, killing a super
soldier.
That's
what I'm saying. Why are we trying to...
Which we already knew about.
Yeah, like, why are we trying to prove the X-Files when all we need to prove is that he didn't kill somebody?
This is done so oddly, too, where, like, with each person, we get a recap of a little bit different part of the series, whether it be, like, you know, I think Scully's the first one to take the stand, and she starts talking about the virus, and then the alien takeover, and then we'll have Jeffrey
Spender.
She
gives a big recap. Like,
yeah, and then then Jeffrey Spender will come on and talk about, like, the cigarette-smoking man and the Mulder family.
Yes.
So I guess that's interesting that they're breaking it up, that it's not just one person, but, man, it was one of these things where I'm like, are we doing this? We're recapping the entire series through a series of witnesses?
Yeah, and so, and then there's also the stuff where Scully basically, they have a body, and Scully does an exam, an autopsy, and she finds that it's not Noel Rohr, but they reject the evidence because they never authorized an autopsy. Like, real, like, stupid bureaucratic stuff.
Yeah. Let me also mention here as well that this prosecutor is like, obviously I know it's a bit of a kangaroo court situation.
Yes.
But he's also not very good at staying impartial. Like,
no.
When Scully's on the stand, he's like, but is it true that you were lovers?
Yeah.
Like,
like,
oh,
you
my
can't
God,
ask that.
Dude.
Like, you can't ask that unless it has something directly to do with it. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't.
You can't just randomly bring in a piece of drama to be like, aha, I'm going to see, I saw you flinched.
Yeah. So, yada, 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 Mulder sentenced to death.
Yeah. We should also mention here that, you know, that we see a couple of cutaways. Like, we go to New Mexico where Mulder said he was hanging out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We get some cutaways to what he was doing while he was.
Not particularly. We more so see a Native American, you know, kid go to Gibson Praise and be like, Mulder's in trouble.
We gotta
go say him.
The assumption is, and he did tell Scully he was in New Mexico. So, you know, the assumption is he was maybe hanging out with those guys.
So this is where I'm confused with the whole dead versus seeing dead people thing, because X ends up visiting Mulder, right? And he gives him Marita Covarrubias's address. So, like, did he have that in the back of his head and
maybe
he just didn't remember it?
I'm not going to comment.
Like a Tyler Durden situation?
I'm not going to comment on that.
It's very strange. I will say Marita got a nice glow up, considering the last time we saw her, she was like...
Yeah, that's another thing. Marita Covarrubias is coming back here. Super unnecessary.
Yeah, well, but it's the big...
And confusing.
It's the big ending of the first parter, right? Like, she talks about her part of the recap is about the syndicate and the vaccine and, like, her own involvement with it. But then...
Yeah.
You know, basically Krychek appears and is like, you know, if you keep going down this rabbit hole, they'll kill Marita. And so Mulder is the one to stop his own witness, essentially, and be like, nope, sorry, go leave.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe a sign that these are ghosts, not visions. But either way, it's stupid.
So Gibson Praise is going to arrive in Washington and is going to, you know, meet everybody. And he's going to get brought in as sort of like the surprise witness, right?
Yes.
So something I didn't realize maybe in part one, or maybe they just pop him in here, Toothpick Man, Alan Dale, was he there beforehand, or did he only sit in for like this one time for Gibson Price?
I didn't notice.
He's not a human.
I didn't notice. But maybe he was there.
It's a big thing, right?
Yeah.
Where he's like, oh, I can identify, you know, I can read everyone's minds, including the fact that I can't read his because he's not human. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes, exactly.
And this is when Mulder finally decides to, like, give a shit.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, we're, whatever.
Yeah. It's like, you're afraid of what I am. You know, I can't believe there's one of them sitting right here.
Yeah. You're afraid of the truth.
Yeah. And so Gibson's going to tell Mulder, like, hey, you know, bit of good news. Like, why did you go crazy? Three of them were ruling in your favor, but Mulder's just like,
this is pretty consistent, Mulder, though.
I wasn't supposed to win, you know. Basically, he's saying there's a bigger truth that he's trying to protect, even if he dies
exactly
on behalf of it.
Yeah, and that's dumb.
Yeah,
I think he'd learn his lesson by now, but nope.
Doggett and Reyes take the stand. Mm-hmm. Doggett essentially gets trapped, where he talks about, yes, I was a skeptic about the super soldiers. And the prosecutor's like, okay, but you don't believe in aliens.
Yeah.
So, and Mulder's theory is that the aliens are super soldiers, which is incorrect, technically.
Yes.
And then Reyes has to talk about the whole Williams situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, the Reyes stuff comes across a little bit better because it's about a baby. But...
yeah, and it's a little more emotional. And she has this plea at the end, right, where she goes, what's the point of this? To seek the truth or destroy the truth so no man can speak it. Either way, you lose.
Yeah, so very poetic.
She essentially, like, yells at the tribunal, being like, what are you trying to accomplish here?
Which is, like, the right attitude, but, like, also play the game a little bit. And this is what, like, Mulder fucks up, too, by, like, getting, like, going off the rails. But he does that all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, like you said before, this is when Scully comes in with what she believes is a smoking gun of this is not Noel Rohr's body, but Kirsch's like, you didn't sanction this as evidence.
Yes.
So even though we had all these surprise witnesses come in, this will not fly.
Yeah, and he's basically like, and by the way, you're sentenced to death. The end.
Guilty, understandably so. And this is when Mulder decides to give a big speech about how, you know, that evil is not from the devil. Evil is the true collaboration of man. And his only crime was showing that one lie cannot live forever.
Mm-hmm.
Much as you can try, the truth is out there. Drink.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like they did a lot to get to that point. And I don't hate the way his speech went. And it actually does, you know, make me have little goosebumpies.
Yeah, and it's a nice speech. I just wish it wasn't at the tail end of, like, him just sitting catatonic for an episode.
Like us having a recap of the series. It just wasn't necessary.
Right. But what should be noted is that his speech does have a clear effect on Kirsch, who will sort of play the role of Skinner in the past and end up being like the surprise help at the end of the day.
Yeah. And so that kind of leads us into this next bit where everyone's going to help Mulder escape and run away.
he's sentenced to death by lethal injection, which I guess is best.
I'd rather
have that than execution and then electrocution personally.
I don't think they do that in the state of Washington.
Certainly better than guillotine.
Yes, this is not Marie Antoinette.
Could be. Very archaic, but basically a whole group of people are going to go into this military
prison. Yeah, it's like Doggett, Skinner, Reyes, Scully, and then also Kirsch.
But this is also, again, a military prison, and they were able
They
to
need
just,
to up their security.
They were essentially able to walk into Guantanamo Bay and break this guy out single-handedly.
Yeah, and so basically they're like, you need to leave the country. You're going to have to leave the country. You need to go to Canada. So they put Mulder and Scully in a car.
They said, no, we're not filming there anymore.
They put Mulder and Scully in a car, and they start driving away, and they pan onto Gibson Praise's face, and he kind of makes like a, huh? And then we kind of get back to Scully and Mulder, and we find out they're not going to Canada. They're going to New Mexico.
Yeah, they are going south. Meanwhile, speaking of things going south, Doggett and Reyes come back to their job to find that essentially the X-Files has been packed up.
He's gone, baby.
Yep, and so they are met by the Toothpick Man, who basically, they figure out that, I guess, as sort of recompense for them sort of raging against the machine, the X-Files is gone now, and Gibson Praise is able to figure out that, you know, they were able to discern where Mulder and Scully had gone off to.
Yeah, so they know they're in danger.
So Mulder is taking a leak, and he spies the lone gunman.
So I guess this was the most ghost one to me, because they're trying to tell him to, like, stop, like, you need to go home. Like, it's not worth it. It's like the truth isn't as important as your life and all that sort of stuff.
But Mulder wants to. So Mulder says here he wants to change the truth, which I find interesting. And look, here's the also big thing at the end of the day. The eponymous truth is nothing.
Yeah.
Which is probably the most frustrating thing of all, is when you call something the truth and you keep referring to the truth.
Yeah.
This idea of what Mulder is protecting, the fact that he doesn't refer ever to what it specifically is incredibly frustrating.
Well, yeah, because I think the entirety of the X-Files, and we kind of talked about this when we first started watching, I was just like, it's unclear what's real and what's not real. And it's like, there are some things through this rewatch that I, as an older person now, I'm able to say, okay, that was their intention.
There are some absolute truths, like things with the syndicate.
Was the intention. And it's like, but it is so confusing that you can imagine somebody watching this through back in the day without the ability to rewatch would say, wait, are aliens real or are they not real?
Yeah, maybe they do need a recap of the entire series then.
I think, but that recap didn't tell us what the truth was. So, and I think the truth is that, like, what's the question he asked at the beginning of the series? You know, are aliens real? The truth is, yes, they are. And think that that is the truth, but it's become so convoluted that it's like, that can't be clear anymore.
It's so complicated, and I guess it has to deal with, we'll get into this later, of like the 2012 prophecy, but like,
yeah, but that's kind of like thrown in at the last
that
second.
Feels so tacked on that doesn't feel like the big reveal of the truth to me, right? If the truth is, oh, we need to save humanity because they're coming in essentially a little,
we already talked about them coming.
Yeah, exactly. And they already did come, and then we staved them off, and then like now they're coming back.
And they're also still here.
Yeah, exactly. They're also, like, still hanging out.
Yeah,
right,
so
now.
I think saying that is tough.
Well, let's go to New Mexico as we're hanging out.
Shall we?
Some pueblos.
Yeah, so they are going to go to some Anasazi ruins.
Right, where they are going to run into the mysterious Keeper of the Truth, who essentially...
Yes, wise man.
The wise man who had apparently told Mulder to go to Mount Weather to begin with.
Yeah, and who has been communicating with Mulder in like a sneaky way, so he doesn't actually know who he is.
And of course, when you hear that, you probably have a good sense as to who it may be. And indeed, it is confirmed to be the cigarette-smoking man in a terrible wig.
Real bad.
Holy crap.
Real bad.
Ratty AF.
Well, what's funny about this is when we were watching the episode with Jeffrey Spender in it, and you were talking about the cigarette smoking man, I was like, oh, the best is yet to come. Because you were like, and he's dead. And I'm like, no. Nope.
Nope. Of course. You cannot kill this man.
Yeah.
He has now receded and become almost like a shaman.
Yeah.
Complete with the hair. He's smoking out of a hole in his neck. So I guess he eventually recovered from, you know, what he had after he got thrown down the stairs.
So he's alive and I guess well, but yeah, he basically is hiding out because he wants to survive colonization, which is going to happen on December 22nd, 2012.
I mean, it's going to be a long time from now, so like, he better have enough provisions for an entire decade.
Yeah, I mean, he plans on just living in the desert.
I suppose so, but yeah, he basically like prods Mulder here, right? Being I want to keep you safe for this moment, you know, where I can see how afraid you are. So again, it's weird, we're like,
he's protecting
him,
but
at the same time, he also taunts him.
I mean, he's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's nuts.
I mean, this is the guy who assassinated MLK and
his own son.
And JFK as well. And, well, but he didn't kill his own son for some reason.
Like, but he intended to.
He intended to.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just losing his touch in his old age. So, meanwhile, you know, the Cigarette Smoking Man reveals that the reason why he's hiding out here is because they are surrounded by magnetite.
Yes.
Which is, like, the thing. We saw this happen with Terry O'Quinn's character that can apparently take down the super soldiers.
Yeah, exactly. And so he, you know, that's why he's there. And Reyes and Doggett are going to come now.
Yeah, there's going
to
be like a big helicopter
a big
versus
fight.
Car chase.
Yeah, which is so stupid.
I mean, I guess you have to end it on like a big, like if you're ending the show, like, do let's waste our budget,
I guess. But for me, this is not the X-Files.
This to me feels more something like they would do in the X-Files movie rather
than
the TV
show. Not my X-Files.
Hashtag not my X-Files.
Not my X-Files.
Yeah, so we do see something here that's interesting where Noel Rohr is going to show up because, again, now the super soldiers know about it. Doggett just shoots him. He's like, I don't care. I may die here because I feel like he won't die. Just completely by luck being able to be in an area where, because of the magnetite, Noel Rohr does indeed die.
Yeah, Noel Rohr dies, and that's great because we're done with him anyway.
He also, but like, speaking of Looney Tunes, he like flies into the wall.
Yeah. And so they're going to switch cars for some reason, I guess, to like throw them off the scent. And so Mulder and Scully go in the other car, and Doggett and Reyes drive off, and then we see a bunch of black helicopters coming in, and they destroy the entire cliff.
My God, this was so I keep hanging it back on this episode, but the cigarette smoking man's true final death is horrible.
Yes.
It is every chintzy thing you can think of early 2000s CGI.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
From the point of view of this missile that's fired, it zags its way through, and we see it like, we see him throw away his cigarette, and we see the flames, his skin blows apart to reveal his skeleton underneath.
It's not good. And I think what they were going for here was, all of that sort of like high level stuff, but also like, let's make it crystal fucking clear. Like, this guy is D.E.D. dead. You know,
you didn't have to. You know what this feels more to me? This more so feels to me like the climax of Mission Impossible.
Oh, yeah. Like with somebody walking through the smoke. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or like in Mission Impossible 2, when they drove the two motorcycles into each other. Like, that's what it feels like. To your point, not exactly the X-Files, but I guess if they had money in the budget, you know.
It is weird, though. I guess it qualifies as weird.
Spare no expense. But Mulder calls this out. I do like the symmetry of them, you know, finishing with just Mulder and Scully in the hotel room, no Fringe, like all the other characters are gone. It's just the two of them hanging out like they did back in Oregon.
Yeah, just like getting ready for bed, getting ready to talk.
And Mulder, you know, espouses some really interesting things. He says, I've been chasing after monsters with a butterfly net, just sort of like realizing that this thing was even bigger than he could ever imagine it.
But he has this whole speech about the dead and how they're not lost to us. And I think that that's like kind of what the arc of the episode was for him, was this idea of, you know, that his whole quote is that the dead are not lost to us, that they speak to us as part of something greater than us, greater than any alien force. And I feel like that's like his whole thing is, I'm over it, kind of.
Yeah, well, the essential, like the final words are, maybe there's hope. And I think it's this idea for him of, despite like the frightening aspects that exist out
and also
there,
like they're in a pretty precarious situation.
Yeah, they're on the run.
They have no power. They're on the run. They are just like, he's a convicted murderer. Like, it's not good for them. And he says, maybe there's hope. And it's like, okay.
It's an odd, like, I like the message, but it's an odd message.
I like the way the message, I will say, I like the way the message is delivered, but the message itself is a little confusing.
Yeah, but it's an interesting idea coming from Mulder, right? Who believed in like the big spooky aliens, for him to come around and be like, but I think humanity can prevail at the end of the day because of the memories that we hold and the ability for, as Scully talks about when the lone gunman died too, right? This idea of, somebody doesn't truly die because their legacy lives on in a way. I think that Mulder is really espousing that. And I also like when, you know, Mulder kind of like fondles Scully's cross and she talks about how they believe the same thing. Like, it's a really fun connector to the whole faith versus science stuff that we talked about, or like how they've all kind of found the same page at the end of the day.
I do love them just, you know, sort of cuddling.
Yeah, it's really cute where like he gets into bed with her and the music, I really love
the music
where it's
is amazing.
Like soaring, you know, orchestral combining with notes of the theme song.
Yeah. So so it ends on like that really moving note.
Yeah.
But nothing happened.
And that's the thing is like this final scene is almost a distillation of what I would have liked to see from the finale in general. Just like they felt like they had to close up all these big things that they had opened, but like almost if they had focused in a bit more on these character interactions that we liked at the end of the day, rather than having to rehash so many things, I think it would have been ultimately more successful. And it's a little incongruous that we end on this note, and I'm like, that was nice, but like, wait, what were the other, you know, 1 hour 42 minutes of the show?
That's right. It's like, we don't need to sum up anything when you have instances like this that are like breathtaking and amazing and like really moving, and it's like, why can't we just explore that?
Yeah, because those feel earned, right? Yeah. Like, I loved bringing Mulder back, and despite the teases that existed throughout season 9, it was really nice to see David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson back together. It was nice to see Dana, as weird as the seeing dead thing was, it was nice to see him interact with all these different characters.
Like, it just didn't have to be about this trial, and it didn't have to be about this 2012 thing.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like, there was already a mystery out there. Like,
so let me ask, at the time, was this a well-received finale?
I don't think so from the research I've been doing, but it did become the most watched episode of the 9th season. It did have the highest season's Nielsen ratings
measurements
and all
finale.
That.
Like,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure the Lost season 6 finale, which many decry is not a good episode, also had the highest ratings.
Yes, and it when it aired, it was ranked third in its time slot behind the season finale of Survivor Marquesas.
Oh.
And a heavily promoted reunion of The Cosby Show.
Oh, just to talk about other sitcoms. Yeah. So people watch The Purple Rock instead of The X-Files,
yeah,
which dealt with its own rocks.
But critics basically were, you know, they felt the same way we felt. You know, instead of a conclusion, the episode raised new questions. And so, you know, basically, you know, there were a lot of things that were good about it, but it was disappointing to see a show that went to such amazing places end with a clip show,
yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
Like, we don't need a summary.
Right, because there's, like, the Game of Thrones direction of disappointing finale, right, where it's, like, making all these wackadoo mm-hmm. WTF choices, and then there's the X-Files Seinfeld version of the finale,
yeah.
which is more so, like, not lazy, but definitely taking things in, like, an unanticipated
yeah.
direction of essentially rehashing a lot of things rather than, like,
right.
bringing things to a big climactic or even a small conclusion.
And a writer for the New York Times, after the premiere of The Truth, said of the show, "The most imaginative show on television has finally reached the limits of imagination."
Wow.
That's tough.
Dang. And so I would imagine that's probably a reason why Vince Gilligan probably felt a bit unfulfilled that decades
yes.
later he wanted to bring it back.
Yeah, because I think that he had even said, like, that his last write for the show was the Sunshine Days episode, and he was just like,
I don't know why I say Vince Gilligan, Chris Carter.
Oh yeah, yeah, because Vince Gilligan was one of the writers too, but Chris Carter was like, yeah, it didn't hit the needle quite as closely as they would have liked. So yeah, I mean, I think that people were kind of ready for it anyway,
mm-hmm.
But that it didn't satisfy what they were looking for.
Which is tough, because I would say, by and large, with the ninth season, like, it was obviously a much more mixed bag than I would say even the eighth season.
Yeah.
Because, again, there was this sort of hanging specter of Mulder, and at least David Duchovny was in half the episodes
yeah.
in season eight. But there were still some enjoyable parts in it, you know.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think that the majority of the fan base was as up in arms as some of the critics were. You know, I think that especially the Mulder Scully shippers were probably
right,
pretty
were
happy,
to see that back.
And that there wasn't much, like, questioning of that, which I appreciate.
But at the same time, I would say that this was probably one of the worst episodes we have watched in
yes.
general of the series, and to have it be the finale is not good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
which
not.
Is sad, because yeah, I do not think it represents the series.
It
well.
Doesn't. It's just not the right tone. It's not the, you know, it's none of those things that we think about, you know, being super representative of the vibe.
Yeah,
that's
a good
the
call.
The vibe.
The vibe felt off in many ways, and so
yeah.
it sucks to sort of, like, end the series on that. I mean, to sort of talk about what we're doing next. Here's the thing.
Mike's over it, guys. He's done. He's out. He hates it.
I don't hate it. We've just been doing this for a very, very long time.
I can do it forever, baby.
Well, that is incredibly true. So that being said, I think next week we're going to go ahead with a plan that we've spoken about a bit. Essentially, I'm going to get, like, the TLDR
yes.
on the X-Files, not only the second movie, but also bits of seasons 10 and 11. Angela's going to just basically come in, tell me some stuff that happened, and I'm going to wildly react to what I'm assuming is going to be just a lot of
It's a lot of intel, because, I mean, there is 10 and 11, and they're not long seasons, so it's not like a ton of, it's not like 24 season episode
mm-hmm.
season, so it's not so much that I'll be talking to you about, but I think it'll be fun. So I'll have, like, bits and pieces to share with you,
yeah,
because there are things that they do wrap up, which is nice.
It'll be a good time. And look, I do apologize to those of you out there that are angry that we're not coming back. I feel like this would be, like, a nice place to conclude it. I think this will be a fun exercise as well, to just have me naturally react to it rather than having this podcast run for another 4 to 5 weeks.
Well, and I think also my hope is that by telling you some of the stuff, that perhaps you will be inspired one day to watch it.
Yes. And I'm fine watching it, just not necessarily talking about it on microphone. I never thought.
Gasp.
I know, I was gonna say.
I just, like, openly, I was struck dumb for.
I know. Struck dumb.
I was struck dumb.
Yeah, people might not know. I very rarely, but sometimes I do indeed watch shows and not podcasts about them.
I have been making you watch Bridgerton. He's finally done it, folks.
I enjoy it. I like it.
It's a great show.
Dramatic AF, but I enjoy it. It's a natural segue.
Can we
from
go
the
watch
X-Files.
It now?
It's a little late. We'll
I
see.
I don't think so. I think it's great.
Do you have any other things you want to say about these last couple of? Oh, should we got a spook one final time, right?
I guess we should.
Well, first off, I gotta go with Michael Emerson.
Yeah,
he's one of the spookiest actors out there.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's just his general je ne sais quoi.
Have you watched that show Evil that he's on?
I watched like one episode, and then it was one of the ones that wasn't bingeable for me. Like, it was airing weekly, and then I never went back to it.
Something you could do in like one day, one of these days when you're like, I don't have it, because I hear it's like creepy.
But when I don't
like
have anything to watch, I go back and watch Bridgerton.
That's very true. You're on your like third or fourth watch of it.
Oh, I can't wait for March 25th when it comes out.
Yeah, that, and I think you're on your third watch of Umbrella Academy right
now.
No,
that's this is only my second watch.
Watched for the first time last year.
I did.
But I think that may be coming soon as well.
It is. That's why I kind of got
you're catching
board.
Up on your Netflix show. So yeah, definitely Michael Emerson. Do we have anyone for the truth?
Maybe cigarette smoking man.
Yeah, I think it's got to be him.
And his skull.
His little
his
skull.
Gaping...
And his wiry hair.
Yeah, exactly.
That poor man having to wear.
I have
that
stuff to share about him for season 10 and 11 too. That are gonna, it's gonna blow your mind, baby.
But he was a skeleton.
No, he's not alive.
Okay, I was like, no, he can't. He's just gonna be a skeleton man walking around.
Also, I don't think the actor would have been capable.
Yes, this was the season that the skeletons came to life.
Yes.
All right, so. Yeah, that's going to do it for like our regular coverage proper of the X-Files. If you don't want to tune in next week, totally understandable, but I think it'll be a fun exercise for all of us to learn basically what happens with the rest of the X-Files after the original series finished. I really had a fun time here. I know it was a long process, but I think it was worth the endeavor from my perspective. I know there were certainly times that, you know, I was not having fun, but like overall, I think
As we go on, we'll remember.
Vitamin C, play me off.
Do, 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 do.
Oh, cool. We went to the instrumental version.
Do, 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 do.
The acapella group is singing me off here. I know, I really enjoyed it. I'm glad that I ended up watching the show because I do think that it was like such a groundbreaking series in so many ways.
Next Twin Peaks.
Yeah, maybe.
I think we could watch that without podcasting about it for sure. But it is a longer, sort of more complex.
Right. This wouldn't be watch two episodes on a lark. This is very much like you need to watch it.
Yeah, you have to pay attention because it's very confusing.
But I really like David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson. Like, I think they both, especially Gillian Anderson, did like really
gives you more appreciation too for her and her modern day acting stuff that you see her in too. You know, like her, like where she kind of got her start, so to speak, I mean, in the television world. But I mean, she's a powerhouse.
But I really appreciated in particular, like, again, it was more my speed, but really those Monster of the Week, like the Clyde Bruckman-esque episodes. Maybe it's just because I'm into the more comedic fare, but always really appreciated when they were able to thread that needle of like creating something truly wacky and darkly funny out of some very morose
and
sort of...
I am partial to those, but I'm also really partial to the ones that have this like wacky sort of comical side to them, but then are also so full of heart.
Yeah, like of course postmodern Prometheus.
Yeah,
right? Like the final
like,
message of
it's so amazing. And like just like the way that Scully and Mulder stare at each other at the end of that episode is like the encapsulates the X-Files for me.
I forget if we talked about this, the Christmas gift that I got you.
I mentioned it, but it's on the wall behind us. Mike got me a vintage style poster of like a movie poster of postmodern Prometheus.
Yeah, so I should mention, I'm going
to take a picture of it and post it on your Twitter.
Yeah, I'll shout it out to this guy because he's absolutely fantastic. His name is J.J. Lindell. He is someone who I know from a Star Trek podcast that I listen to, like, does vintage posters for those, but he's also a big X-Files fan. He does a lot of vintage posters for the X-Files. I reached out to him and was sort of like ad hoc, you know, my wife's favorite episode is postmodern Prometheus. I know you have a poster of it, but it's not available. And he was able to request a special copy be printed. So thank you to JJ Lendl. And now we have it framed and on display in our office.
And it's the best. I friggin' love it.
It's really well made.
Share in the moonlight. Ugh.
I love it. I love it so much. So yeah, that's going to do it. Thank you all so much for listening. Again, special thanks to, you know, people like Spencer, to Craig, to Brendan Fitzpatrick, like people that have been Emily Reed, people have been like actually following along with us. Our numbers, much like
it's been a journey.
Yeah, much like the X-Files proper, like the numbers were small but mighty of vocal supporters. I have no idea how many people stuck along through the entire like year plus that we have been doing this, but it's an experiment that I think proved successful ultimately.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole point was let's make Mike Bloom watch the X-Files, so done.
Mission
did it.
Accomplished, and we have one more thing to check off, essentially, Angela filling me in on what else comes from the X-Files, starting with the I Want to Believe movie, which I think came out like soon after this, right?
Yeah.
So, I believe it came out like 2008.
Yeah, it was one of those things that like the X-Files ended and then there was like a nice surprise, because this ended in, 2002?
Yeah.
And so it was our freshman year of college, and yeah. I remember it coming out and like trying to get people to go to see it with me, and nobody wanted to go.
Well, maybe if I had time traveled back to our freshman year, I would have gone to see it with you, and that could have been when our love kindled rather than 3 years later.
I think that no, that wouldn't have happened.
All right. Well, our time travel fantasies are denied, but will not be denied is our coverage of the X-Files next week. Thank you all so much for listening. Again, next week, we're covering everything else that comes after with the X-Files in a bit of a short, truncated format. Until then, case closed.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.